No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome to the Rise Up See Red podcast, the Arizona Cardinals show featuring Seth Cox from Revenge of the Birds. He's and from the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com, a USA Today wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And this is our 120-something show overall, and we are going to talk training camp. I've got Seth on the line. Seth, how are you doing tonight as we are on just a couple of days away from the start of camp?
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I'm doing great. Busy season is about to start for you and I, which is, good and bad. Good because it's difficult, to come up with the required number of posts we have to come up a day during the dead time. Bad because now for the next, let's hope through February, it's going to be a lot.
Drinking out of fire hydrant is what we're doing. We're yes. Drinking out of fire hydrant, trying to keep up with everything that's coming around. So, again, that's Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. I myself am from CarsWire.com. And the show, this episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast is brought to you by Fan Essentials. If you would like to get all your Cardinals gear or any NFL team merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep, check out fanessentials.net. All you do is pick your favorite sports team, and every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear so you don't have to, and each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear. It makes for an amazing gift for any sports fan. Prices start at just $34.99, so visit fanessentials.net. Now, for listeners of the show, use the promo code CRED when you go to check out, and you get 30% off your first month. So visit fanessentials.net to get all the essentials you need. And we also have the offer still out there. In fact, I'd like to give a shout-out to Tim from Twitter, the Twitter handle CardsFan37, who is this week's winner. He gets a free month of Fan Essentials. If you listen to the show a little bit later, I will get a hold of you and let you know the code that you need to use for that. But the idea is still the same. We're going to put it out there again. I'm going to give away a free month of Fan Essentials every week. And the next one is, again, tweet the show Twitter account, Rise Up Sea Red, or post it to the Facebook page, Rise Up Sea Red as well, with a photo of your best Cardinals gear. And the best one of the week will get that free month of Fan Essentials. We'll go ahead and get started tonight. Tonight's show, recording on Tuesday night, is camp's going to start. Well, the rookies have already reported. The veterans report in a couple of days, and the first practice will be Friday. We're going to talk mainly about training camp, but there are a couple of things that have happened over the past couple of days. One, notably, Darnell Dockett, number 90, signed with the Cardinals on a ceremonial one-day contract and announced his retirement. They had a press conference in his honor, honored him and his career. Some good stuff. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and whether or not we think he should be into the Ring of Honor at some point. And then on Tuesday, the Cardinals announced that there were four players who will start training camp on the physically unable to perform list. We'll talk about the ramifications of that and if there's anything that we can glean from that. And then we're going to talk about the defensive side of the ball. We talked offense last week. We're going to talk defense and preview training camp, the position battles, the bubble players, what are we excited to see. And I think this is going to be much more interesting because there's a lot more unknown. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's talk first about Darnell Dockett. Now, when we got the announcement of Darnell's, going to retire, was this something that you anticipated that he would come back on one of those Adrian Wilson type contracts and retire a member of the Cardinals?
It was weird because he left in a weird, kind of huff situation where nobody was really sure what his relationship was with the Cardinals still. So I think it just shows what the Cardinals organization is right now and what players think of it, as opposed to, you know, it's kind of nice that it happened at the same time so we can juxtapose the what is happening. But you look at the Suns and Amari Stoudemire, and, you know, if you were to ask who was a more influential and, you know, bigger star and all that, I think everybody would say Amari. Those Suns teams are transcendent within Arizona sports history. And the Cardinals team had a nice 2-year run. But in the end, it comes down to management, coaching, and the way players feel about that, you know, that grouping. And obviously, Bruce Arians, Steve Keim and company, and probably the most Michael Bidwill, but they made Darnell comfortable enough and, you know, feel like he mattered enough to come back and retire as an Arizona Cardinal, where obviously he had all of his success, and, you know, kind of sign off his career that way instead of, you know, and kind of mend the fence. And let's be honest, the broken fence was like a fence post. It wasn't like he knocked over the fence. It was like one, you know, wicket on the fence. It wasn't very much. And that was unfortunate for him. From my mind, I'm of the opinion these guys just need to get paid as much as they can for as long as they can, because they don't make any, you know, they don't have the same guarantees and guaranteed contracts as the NBA guys. So I don't harvest hard feelings towards any NFL player, you know, for kind of going after the money. But especially Darnell Dockett, because he didn't really chase the money. He wanted a little bit of money and playing time, and just injuries had just took too much away from him.
Well, and I didn't think about this till just now, but you'll notice who was at the press conference. It was Michael Bidwill, it was Bruce Arians, and it was Darnell Dock. You know who wasn't there? It was Steve Keim, who wasn't there, and he was the guy who cut him loose. You could definitely tell that Bidwill had a great relationship with Darnell. In fact, with the anecdote is the part where Darnell actually had some a bit of a connection with, you know, with Michael's mother, which is, you know, she's this little old lady when he's you know, modeling the new uniforms that came out several years ago. She's like, oh, he's a nice young man, and Michael Bidwill, he's like, no, Mom, not on the field. He's completely different. And then BA as well, he had a good relationship with Arians that first year. And I think the hurt that there was, I don't think so much it was a broken, you know, burning bridge or broken fence. It was simply he loved the Cardinals and he wanted to stay. He wanted the team to honor the contract, but he was hurt by that. He had great relationships, and it's great to see that he is, you know, he's a Cardinal, which brings us now. I was a little bit surprised at the news that he was going to do that, but not too surprised. And on the heels of Adrian Wilson doing the same thing, this is really cool to see, because this is what you see other franchises do. This you see players who have been cut. You see players going back to like the 49ers to sign an honorary contract, or back to the Cowboys. They're doing this now for the Cardinals, something I don't think in my memory has never happened here before. And it's happening now. Adrian Wilson, Darnell Dockett. That's not going to happen with Anquan Boldin. That's the unfortunate thing. But, you know, we're seeing players, they're let go and they still come back. And that's really fun to see. Now, this brings to the next question. This is the natural question. Adrian Wilson's in the Ring of Honor. Darnell Dockett, well, Kurt Warner's in the Ring of Honor. Darnell Dockett, who was part of the transformation of the team. Not only was he part of the transformation, he helped forge, he and Wilson on defense really kind of forged their identity defensively. He put up very good numbers. He was one of the most dominating defensive players in the league, most feared when he was in his prime. And now, you know, he multiple Pro Bowls. Is it three Pro Bowls he went to, three that he was alternate for? You know, he led his position in sacks for a couple of years. During time, what is 2007 to 2013, no defensive tackle had more sacks than he did. He was just a very disruptive player. So this is the question. Does he deserve to be in the Ring of Honor?
I think yes, simply because of, as you said, the time, and that's what I talked about earlier. Everything that happened in that time was very much, you know, it was a culture change. It was a different era for the Cardinals and what they were doing. And back in my formative writing days, when Bleacher Report allowed anybody to sign up and write for them, I actually wrote an article on this. I don't know if it's still there or anything of that nature, but I wrote about how important it was that the Cardinals extended Darnell Dockett and how it was changing the profile and changing the idea of what the Cardinals were. And, you know, it just was one of those things that it had to happen, and it happened at the right time. And, you know, it was beneficial. And, you know, maybe from a perspective of on the field, it's not too much, or, you know, maybe he doesn't make it happen, but I think just overall the entire landscape of Arizona or the Arizona Cardinals and what he meant, I think it leads him to needing to be into that, you know, Ring of Honor.
I would agree. I wrote about it on Tuesday. I wrote about it today, and it comes down to this. Who are the players you want in your ringer? You want iconic players for your franchise who spent a long time there or had a lasting impact there, who was, in fact, also one of the best players in the league during his time. And that's Darnell Dockett. Now, that's one of the things, you know, if Adrian Wilson is a Ring of Honor member, then Darnell Dockett should be, because if you look at their playing career, they were equally, pretty much the both of them, were equally dominant at their position in terms of a league-wide reputation. They were there for the lows, and they helped transform the franchise. Not only that, but Darnell also performed at the highest level with the, you know, the record three sacks in the Super Bowl. Yes, there's the off-the-field, you know, shenanigans that he's known for. And I found it very, very funny of referring to Mark Dalton, their VP of Media Relations, all the conversations he and Dalton had about Twitter. And Darnell was always an entertaining follow on Twitter, pretty much before Bruce Arians came around, after Bruce Arians came to town. But basically, the logic comes down. If Adrian Wilson's a Ring of Honor member, then there's no reason for Darnell Dockett not to be. That doesn't mean it has to be this year. Now, they put Adrian Wilson in fast. Darnell Dockett, it doesn't have to be now. It doesn't have to be next year. But if Adrian Wilson's in, they definitely, Darnell Dockett should be, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I like the package deal thing. I'm, you know, I think Adrian was a better overall player just because of the position and what he did and kind of everything he did there. But I think their impact was equally as important.
Yeah, and now that leads to a question. Now, this is actually a conversation that we had a couple years ago. I'm pretty sure we talked about this on the show. Because it was when Kurt Warner was announced that he was going into the Ring of Honor. So when Kurt Warner, when that announcement came out, then we had the discussion. Who next? I mean, because Kurt Warner really only had, I mean, he wasn't a lifer for the Cardinals, and his whole Cardinals career wasn't even great.
And the crazy thing is, like, and I didn't even remember this, but he was with the Cardinals for five seasons. I mean,
he was
with the Cardinals for a long time. It's not like he was just with the Cardinals for three seasons, like we all remember. He was with them for five seasons, and the first two he couldn't, you know,
Yeah, he wasn't the starter the whole time, so he was behind Josh McCown. He was behind Matt. He got benched for Matt Leinart. Yeah. And then the next season, you know, in 07, that sort of the Ken Wisenhunt kind of changed things and really sort of put him back on the pedestal. So, yeah, Kurt Warner, I can understand. He was iconic. He, you know, best quarterback the Cardinals had ever had. And that took them to the Super Bowl. So I understand that. It makes perfect sense. But like that group of people, and on the radio, Burns and Gambo is saying there's really kind of five players from that era that need to be in the Ring of Honor, and that's Warner, and that's Dockett, it's Adrian Wilson, it's Anquan Boldin, it's Larry Fitzgerald. Well, there's no question. The second the second Larry Fitzgerald retires, he's going to be put in the Ring of Honor. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. Anquan Boldin is an interesting one because the way things ended, I would think that as a franchise, it would be great to extend that olive branch to him. But I think he now identifies himself more with Baltimore than he does with Arizona.
Well, I think part of it was simply that he didn't, he wanted to be here and he wanted to be appreciated financially, and he wasn't. So that led to what happened, obviously, and that led to the falling out. And honestly, that just meant that they couldn't, you know, they couldn't ever come to terms. And Anquan's, I'm trying to think of any, you know, other sports figures in Arizona sports history that left, you know, kind of, nah, maybe not even similar to, kind of like Charles was in Arizona. The only difference was Anquan was drafted here, you know, but, and Charles was a bigger profile player, but
yes,
it's similar to how they left, and the Suns ended up mending that fence, but it took a long time, didn't it? Like it
did.
Didn't it just happen in the last 5 years that he went in the Ring of Honor?
So, yeah, it wasn't terribly long ago.
So, I mean, we're talking about, yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be, you know, 10 years after he retires, as opposed to the Warner and Dockett type thing, where he just went right in, you know, not the Ring of Honor like Dockett, but where they're going to go into the Ring of Honor fairly quickly.
And, you know, this is a conversation that's real interesting, because as the Cardinals become, have this reputation of, is, you know, they were bad for so long that there really wasn't anyone worth doing. And there's still some interesting omissions. If you look historically, Larry Sanders.
Yeah. Jim Hart.
Probably, Jim Hart. I mean, or Jackie Smith. That's the one that puzzles me the most. Jackie Smith, tight end, Hall of Famer, spent every year except for one as a member of the Cardinals. He's what I think fourth in franchise history in receptions. He's not in the Ring of Honor. That puzzles me to this day. But you know, we're talking about players but I think it's going to end up being pickier now, a player now on the roster that'll be a Ring of Honor player. You know, if Carson Palmer can take the Cardinals to the promised land with the numbers that he's had, I think he'll deserve it. He would earn his way into Cardinals lore and to be immortalized.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, like you said, there's such a gap of people, and it's hard to understand. And maybe an older listener can fill you and I in, because even you probably don't know a lot of the St. Louis Cardinal history.
No, not at all.
And so maybe there's some, you know, again, fences that need to be mended down the line, that, because let's be honest, until what, 2005, maybe even later, it wasn't like people really thought highly of the Arizona Cardinals or just the Cardinals organization. So there could be some stuff, you know, that happened back in the day that maybe after the eldest Bidwill passes away, things will change, and that line will, you know, the waiting list will shorten, so to speak.
Well, let's move on from the topic of Darkin and the Ring of Honor. There was a little bit of news came out today on Tuesday, and that's there are going to be four players starting off on the pup list, on the physically unable to perform. The preseason pup list is not, you know, it really is nothing other than it protects them. It doesn't save a spot on the roster. They're still there. They just can't practice, and they can be activated at any time. But putting them on the preseason PUP, if you know anything about that, if they are not activated and they get to the end of the preseason, the regular season rolls around, time for the final 53, they can be, if they've been remained on PUP, is they can be placed on the regular season, which then basically sits them out for the first 6 weeks, and you don't lose them for this season. But four players land up on that list. Tyrann Mathieu, Justin Bethel, Frosty Rucker, and Zach Wagenman. In terms of that, for me, there was one surprise, and that was Bethel. Were you surprised by any of those?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bethel's surprising because all we've heard is that he's going to be the number two corner, and then he's not even ready for the start of training camp when he wasn't exactly great, you know, in his time before or in the playoffs, and so. Other than that, we knew about Rucker. He didn't mention Bethel in being Steve Keim when he talked about guys on the PUP. Did he? When he threw out the first pitch at the Arizona Diamondbacks game, or maybe he did, and I'm just not remembering.
Correctly. I didn't catch where he said anyone by name. They said three or four guys. I speculate maybe Bethel, but. What's interesting on this is, you know, even early on, the talk was both he and Peterson were supposed to be ready for training camp. And maybe it's just almost there. Maybe it's just, a couple of days or something. But now, the signing of Mike Jacobson suddenly makes a lot more sense. Now, you know, that makes a lot more sense in the fact that they're still looking at, you know, Chris Culliver. It makes sense that maybe he's had some setbacks, or maybe he hasn't healed like they thought they were. And, you know, then they really don't want Brandon Williams to start unless he shows that he is amazing. Ready.
Yeah. Well, and I got the exact quote from the Kyle Odegaard article, and says three or four players will likely start training camp on the PUP. While he didn't give names, educated guesses would include safety, Tyrann Mathieu, defensive tackle, Frosty Rucker, and outside linebacker, Zach Wagenman. Keim said guard Evan Mathis, who sat out minicamp following minor surgery, is expected to be ready to go. So I think that's, you know, so it was not from Keim. Again, it was educated guesses by Kyle Odegaard, who's one of the beat writers for the Arizona Cardinals. And so you take those educated guesses, you know, air quotes, with kind of not even a grain of salt. Like you take that as this is kind of what this is the benefit of writing for the team, right? Being the inside guy on the team, and that they'll have a little more information than everybody else. And so when Bethel's name didn't even come up, then to see him on the PUP list is disheartening. Now, I will say it is good that Mathis isn't on it, because I think the offensive line needs as much time to gel at those three new starters as they can possibly get to make sure that, you know, the beginning of the season is as smooth as possibly can be.
Right. And that I was worried that Mathis, especially with the two off-season surgeries on his ankle, his absence was going to be noted. I'm worried, and I think this will affect things. Now, I the thing with Bethel, I think it's simply a precaution just to make sure that he can get finally cleared. But nonetheless, he didn't participate. Yeah, and he didn't participate in any OTAs. He did not in mini camp. So he hasn't had any off-season reps.
That really opens the door. He was supposed to definitely be the starter. It really opens the door to say a Mike Jenkins to step in and keep him on the bench.
And honestly, like, we don't even know if that's a good or bad thing,
right? Because
Jenkins hasn't played very much, and so, you know, you have a guy that's a consistent injury issue player in Mike Jenkins, and that's not a shot at him. That's not saying anything bad about him. It's just, it's the reality. He's been injured quite a bit. You know, and I think the Cardinals, let's be completely honest. The Patriots game is still one you want to be at full strength for, even without Tom Brady. Maybe the Buccaneers game you can talk me into. They don't need a Justin Bethel yet, but those wide receivers are big. I mean, the Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson combo, and you add in their giant tight end Austin Seferian Jenkins, and the fact that Jameis Winston is, you know, a guy that can throw the ball around a little bit. You know, again, that could be problems. And then you go to Buffalo. And this is where missing time gets dicey for me, because you're really going to set yourself behind the eight ball, so to speak, if you have issues in the secondary in those first three games. Like I said, you can convince me that they'll be okay in the New England game, and you can convince me that they might be okay in the Tampa Bay game. But you don't want to go in there with 31-year-old habitually injured Mike Jenkins, or maybe worse, Brandon Williams and Harlan Miller as your, you know, 2 and 3 corners. And that's where this Bethel injury and on the PUP actually comes into play and is kind of disheartening, because you want that battle, and, you know, we'll get to this shortly, but you want that battle to start at 3. You don't want that battle to be starting at 2. You don't want 2 unknowns out there with Patrick Peterson, because I can guarantee you Patrick Peterson will then see 4 targets in the first 3 games, and those other guys are going to see, you know, 150 targets in those first 3 games. And that's just not what you want. It's going to happen anyways because it's Patrick Peterson, but you can't convince me that Justin Bethel is not the better option for that.
Right. And you know, with Brandon Williams, as much as they talk about the potential he has, he's going to be a very up and down. He's going to be a highlight film or burnt toast. That's kind of the feeling that I get, because he's going to get thrown at. He's good at press coverage, but if he has to read routes and play off and do anything other than say you cover him, that's it. It's going to be a struggle.
But that's how he was at Texas A&M. So it's not even like you didn't know what you were getting from him.
Right.
You have to live with it for the first 1 to 2 to maybe even 3 years. I mean, we're talking about a Justin Bethel type jump in terms of the fact that he basically played the equivalent of like 7 college games at defensive back. When you look at his snaps played, because I think it was 500 and something. So he basically played the equivalent of 6 or 7 full college games at cornerback. Even though it's in the SEC, it's a D1 program, it's a big-time program, it's still a massive jump. And if he's good this year, if he's consistently average this year, then that's awesome, because he's only got – you know, one way to go, and that's up. But if he's exactly what we all expect him to be, and that's inconsistent, it's going to be a
smorgasbord of penalty flags.
Yeah, it's going to be a long, you know, however much time he has to spend as the number whatever corner, 2 or 3. And so that's why I think this is slightly disappointing.
All right. Well, let's actually start talking about the training camps. Let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. So we got next on Revenge of the Birds. Next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're going to actually get into the defensive side of the ball, talk about the position battles we're looking at, what we're excited about, bubble players, surprises that we might see. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. I guess I still know what the name of the show is. let's talk about the defensive line. Overall, we're going to talk about the defense side of the ball. What are you most excited or most anxious about as camp enters?
I'm anxious. It's kind of a cop-out. I assume you're going the same place. I'm anxious to see the pass rush. I mean, they invested so heavily in it. And the next person that quotes the number of sacks Robert Kimdiche had in his career at Ole Miss, I'm just gonna block you on Twitter. So don't do it. But I'm interested to see the pass rush. Like they spent heavily on Robert Kimdiche in terms of risk, and then they obviously spent heavily in terms of Chandler Jones. What do you get out of that? Does that improve Marcus Golden from being a almost, you know, 8-sack player to an 8-sack player? Does that create, you know, Robert Kimdiche as being a 5-6 sack player? Does that create, you know, to Ken Jones put up double digit sacks again? And then obviously, what does Calais Campbell have left in the tank?
And that's one of the things I want to see as well. Now, training camp's hard to see. Because they're not all actually get to the quarterback, and you're facing your own player, so that part's always a little bit difficult. So I'm more excited to see what that is preseason wise, but in camp, I'm interested in how the defensive backs look, how that plays out. Tyvon Branch, how does he look back there? Tyrann Mathieu, when does he get back? Who's going to be in Justin Bethel's spot? Is it going to be Jenkins? Is it going to be Sean Prater, Asa Jackson? Is it going to be Chris Culliver? Or is it going to be Brandon Williams? And how does that look? I would like to see how that defensive line improves with the addition of Kimdiche, with that another year under – well, the return of Corey Peters, the addition of Kimdiche, another year under his belt for Rodney Gunter. I'm interested in seeing that. The pass rush is, you know, when I think training camp, I don't think pass rush so much, because what are you going to see in camp? You're not going to see any sort of pass rush. But yeah, preseason, yes. And I'm actually super, you know, I have in my back pocket these, you know, bold predictions for 2016. And I'm ready to throw it out there that I think the Cardinals will flirt with having 3 double-digit sack guys this season in Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, maybe even Calais Campbell, just because, assuming all 3 stay healthy, that I think that will be significantly improved. And instead of, you know, almost plays, they finish plays.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be big to see. Obviously, like you said, you can't tell a ton about the pass rush. And again, we talked about this last week. It's going to be kind of, you know, it's going to be kind of odd because we're like, all right, we really want to see this pass rush, but don't rush well against DJ Humphries or
whatever. Right, exactly. Right?
Let's keep it all on the left side of the line where we know what we're getting for Jared Valdir and Mike Iupati. And then, you know, on the opposite side, if – I don't know. I go back and forth. Like, if the defensive backs are playing well, is Carson Palmer okay? Like, does he need surgery? Is his arm dead? But if the cornerbacks are and defensive backs are getting toasted, well, that's kind of expected, right? Like, I mean, it's – we're talking about the best receiving – core in the NFL, you know, top 3, if you want to talk about somebody else. I don't know if I would agree, but you know, that's, I don't know, like, it's such a weird training camp, so weird. But yeah, I want to see the pass rush, because I just want to see the explosiveness of Kimdiche and Jones at the same time. I also want to see how they kind of use those guys, right? Like, what is their – how do they line them up, and what is their plan for them?
Yeah, so let's talk about the defensive line in specifics. Roster battles, position battles. You know, we basically say, yes, unless something changes, Calais Campbell's going to play the bulk of that right DT spot. But then on the other side, is someone going to push? Are we going to see Rodney Gunter push, you know, Frosty Rucker, especially, you know, Frosty Rucker, you know, his production fell off a little bit late last season. He got hurt. He's up there in age. I'm looking at the other defensive tackle position and thinking, perhaps, is Rodney Gunter going to push for that spot? Can Kandichi push for significant rotation, for significant snaps on that side?
You know, I think when it comes to the defensive line, it's going to be a base of Campbell, Peters, and Rucker to start the season. Obviously, Frosty's ankle is going to matter. Or is it his ankle? I think it's his ankle.
It
right?
is. He had a high ankle sprain at the end of last year that did. He had surgery on.
And so it's going to be his ankle, you know, and that matters. From there, you know what? It's a toss-up. Are we going to see Gunter and Kandichi come in packages with, you know, as the pass rushing unit? Are we going to see Peters out there pass rushing, or are they going to use him and his two, you know, surgically repaired Achilles tendons as a run stopper, you know, early on? And then as he shows that he is healthy, then move to the next, you know, phase. I think we know the top six, right? Like, it's going to be Calais, Peters, Frosty, Gunter, Kandichi, and I'm forgetting an obvious one, I think. Or am I? No, I think that's it. We know
because
the five.
The five and the six and the seven. So you've got Ed Stinson and Josh Morrow and Red Bryant.
And Xavier Williams. And Xavier
Williams all battling for if they go with seven. You know, and that's, you know, for me, you know, depending on the ankle, Frosty Rucker might be an out. Now, this is something that Josh Weinfuss put out there. It could be a salary dump. If his health is an issue and he isn't able to come back as the same type of player, you know, with a guy like Red Bryant, who they were as, you know, especially with what we saw in All or Nothing, that they were really impressed with him and think they still has got something in the tank. The leadership that he brings can replace what Rucker does. And the on-field production, you can probably get in Gunter / Kandichi / even Ed Stinson. And so I think the Rucker may or may not be as sure thing as I thought he would have been a few weeks ago.
Right. And, you know, I kind of said that from the beginning because the twofold reality of age and salary and, you know, you can only cut so many Ed Stinson's and Josh Morrow's to get cap. Right. Whereas right. You know, you cut Frosty Rucker and keep Ed Stinson and Josh Morrow, and then what do you have? Well, you just saved probably, I think it's about $350,000, and you have two players on the roster. It's one of those things that it's a good problem to have, obviously, for the Arizona Cardinals, and it's a different problem to have than what we're used to. We're used to seeing, all right, are they going to cut Calais Campbell because they're going to go 4-12, and they're not going to be worth, you know, they're not going to have the money to deal with it type thing. So that's different. I just think Rucker and Bryant are sort of interchangeable. I understand Rucker's right. better up the field type player in terms of gameplay, but you have here, and here's the other thing. You have Kandichi and Gunter. Gunter was not drafted to be a nose tackle. He was drafted to be a you know,
they're what they call the defensive tackle, the interior. Yeah,
he was drafted to be a bigger Darnell Dockett. That's what he was drafted to be. And so the other reality is, and this is, and I do think this factors into a lot of the decisions they're going to make. And we see it kind of with Dwight Freeney. Do they know that Frosty Rucker will be there in October or November when, God forbid, but when it happens, somebody goes down, when Josh Morrow goes down, you know, when Ed Stinson goes down and they put him on the PUP, Frosty Rucker's more likely to be there than Stinson or Morrow because they're young and cheap. He is older, expensive, and he's going to be very, very picky about where he goes and plays. He's not going to go sign with, you know, the Cleveland Browns again to chase a payday. He's going to say, okay, the Patriots don't want me. You know, the Seahawks don't want me. Maybe like the Bengals don't want me back. All right, I'm going to wait till Arizona comes calling. Like if those contenders don't want me, then I'm not going anywhere. And I think that comes into play more than people realize or want to admit.
And so we look at the bubble guys. Would you say, I'd have to say that Rhett Bryant definitely fits that bill. Ed Stinson fits that bill. And Josh Morrow, because I mean, they really don't have any necessarily. They have very little in the way of camp bodies on the defensive line. They have a couple guys. I mean, you've got Olsen Pierre. I don't know what he has to offer, but pretty much the guys that they had on the roster last year, you know, Bryant, Morrow, Xavier Williams, and Ed Stinson, I would qualify them as all bubble players because all of them are talented enough to play in the NFL, but they somebody or a couple of players who can play in the league are going to end up off this roster.
Right. And, you know, this is one of those things that people just don't get. And it's the reality of the NFL and stuff like that. But, like, what is Ed Stinson's commodity? Like, what is he as a commodity? What is Josh Morrow as a commodity? I think they're nice players. You know, we like them. As players, you and I do, but like, what is their, you know, what is their value in the NFL? What do people truly think about them? And from there, that's where you have to decide, you know, what you're cutting versus what you're keeping. And so, you know, like I said, I think Morrow and Stinson are more valuable to the Cardinals than they are another NFL team because they are talented depth guys, but they're not guys you want to roll out with playing 85% snaps. I mean, we saw that with Josh Morrow. He played 85% of the snaps for like two games.
And it wasn't good. When he's playing about 30, 35 snaps, he's really effective because he's a motor player. You get him out there and you get that effort. He's disruptive. He's disruptive without really making tackles. So he doesn't show up on the stat sheet. You just see him affecting players when he's out there 35 snaps.
Exactly. And so I think that's, you know, that's what the reality is. So, you know, Stinson have more importance to the Cardinals because they're cheap depth, whereas Rucker is probably a more valuable NFL commodity, but he's like, I'm 33. I don't want to be, you know, chasing anything. Like, I'll just wait till, you know, a contender calls me. And so I think that's, you know, I think, like you said, the bubble guys are Bryant, Morrow, and Stinson. But I think you can put Rucker on there because I think he truly is on the bubble because of one Red Bryant's presence. If Red wasn't on the roster, it's a completely different thing because he is, you know, he and Calais then are the veterans. But now, you know, Red's basically Frosty in terms of veteran presence. He just plays a different way.
Yes. Move to the linebackers to talk inside. You know, there's not a whole lot of battle going on. You know, Daylon Buchanan's got his linebacker position up. Kevin Minter is definitely the starter. Whether he is a two down or a three down backer. That's what I'm interested to see. Do we see Alani Fua come in for passing downs? Or is Minter, because I know Bruce Arians sees Minter as a two-down player, but he became an okay three-down player. Someone you could do it. But they really like Fua and the skill set he brings. I'm interested to see if he can become, you know, the pass coverage guy and have Fua and Deion offering up better options, speed side to side, and then coverage ability.
Yeah, and what steps do Fua and Martin take? And to be honest, what step does Minter take, right? Like, he is only going into his fourth year. Now, you consider year one a wash because they had, you know, a top three linebacker duo in the NFL. You consider year two a lost year because of the injury and the uncertainty, and then kind of what the unfair expectations that got put on him. You know, when all of a sudden he went from being, you know, the hammer in a defense to all of a sudden now we really need you to make plays because our inside linebacker depth sucks because, you know, our best linebacker that we paid all the money to got busted for drugs. So that's, you know, that's kind of where you have to, you find what's going to happen now. Where's Minter's growth? Is he a guy that you can bank on to be more than a two down guy? Is he, you know, is he ever going to take that next leap, or is that what he is and that's okay? It's just a replaceable commodity. And so, like you said, Fua and his length and athleticism gave Martin and his ability in space versus Minter and kind of being that run down linebacker, and what more does he give the team?
Something to kind of look at. I've always looked at pretty much the whole off season is, okay, you're going to have Buchanan, you're going to have Minter, you're going to have Fua, and probably Gabe Martin. You know, there might be a little battle there for the Gabe Martin position, but it might not even be that certain because the guy that they've had playing behind Buchanan isn't a linebacker. It's another safety in Chris Clemons. Now, he's had a little bit, you know, there's some potential legal problems swirling around him, but maybe that's, you know, maybe that's the way they end up going. And I want to see how they play behind Buchanan. Do they go with, you know, the dollar backer type guy, or do they try and do a more traditional type pairing of linebackers if Buchanan's not in there for the second team? If they go with Clemons, or if they try to line up, you know, if they try and line up Lamar Lewis or Gabe Martin in that position.
Yeah, you know, it is going to be interesting to see what they do because they have different type players now. Like you said, obviously, Deion Buchanan, they're just going to hope he never comes off the field. That's basically all he is now, is a linebacker. You know, call him whatever you want, but he's a linebacker. And then, then like you said, you have all these chess pieces, but are any of them, you know, kind of like, are they all pawns, or do you know, that do, you know, different things but are basically the same player and you can only put them in situations? Or is there a guy that can, you know, develop into more? Lewis is, he's small, isn't he? Like 200. I mean, he's like Deion Buchanan size.
Yes.
But he's not the athlete Deion was.
Not quite. No, he's got some speed, but not the same kind of speed.
So, I mean, that, you know, it's a fair question. I don't know. The linebackers are so difficult because I still feel like there's no talent in the inside linebacker position. Like, Deion Buchanan's a great player. And then everybody else, I have to talk myself into. And so
Kevin Minter, he's fine. I mean,
he is. He's a, he's a, He's a replaceable commodity, but he's a starter in the NFL. He's just a replaceable starter. Like, you could take one of 15 guys and put him in there, and you're going to get the that are starters. Let me say,
well, yeah, that's kind of like how that inside or middle linebacker position is across the league. You've got a few really elite guys. You've got your Thomas Davis. You've got your Luke Kuechly. You had your Brian Urlacher. But you have that position, you can put anyone there and get numbers. I mean, look, Paris Lennon put up numbers when he was with the Cardinals. And it's not like he was good, but that position can be productive. So, yeah, I mean, if you have Buchanan and Minter, and if they're healthy, you're okay. I mean, the thing is that, yeah, people really don't realize how good Buchanan is. And he put up, the numbers he put up last year, production-wise, between tackles and sacks, interception, forced fumble, the only other player in the NFL to produce the same level of stats across the board was Thomas Davis. And Thomas Davis is one of the absolute best in the game.
Exactly. And so, you know, you look at production and things, and like you said, they're all interchangeable for the most part, except say for, you know, 5 to 8 guys. And so the question becomes, is there a more versatile chess piece for James Betcher to use? And I just don't think there is on this roster.
If you look at outside linebacker, obviously Chandler Jones, you put him on one side, you're good. Now, the outside linebacker position is interesting. Well, you know, Bruce Arians called it 4 dogs, 2 bones. Marcus Golden, obviously, I think is in the driver's seat, but it'll be interesting to see. Does Alex Okafor look more like the 2014 Alex Okafor, who had, you know, if he's 2014 Alex Okafor, that's a really good pairing. But even so, you have a 3-man rotation of Jones, Golden, and Okafor. You feel pretty good about that. Now, the question is behind them. What does Kareem Martin do with his development? Is Shaq Riddick anything at all other than an athlete? And this guy out of the CFL, Tristan Okpalago, do they do anything? And so there's going to be some interesting battles there. One for the playing time at the number 2 spot. Okafor, I mean, can he get back in good graces with the coaching staff? And, you know, between Martin and Riddick, I think it very well could come down to one or the other on this roster.
Yeah, and that's something I've written about. I could see them cutting Alex Okafor eventually and keeping Martin and Riddick because of the incident, the unspoken incident. But, you know, it comes down to the fact that they're going to keep who they think they're going to get the most out of, right? Like, so who do they feel like is going to give them the most? And honestly, I don't know. And I can say that with confidence. I don't know. Past Jones and Golden, you have a lot of questions. You have more questions than answers. I want to see Okpalagu because it's just a different game. And so don't tell me anything about what he did in Canada. Just let me, you know, see what he does in the NFL. And then we can make a decision on him. What is Kareem Martin? Has he figured out how to use his athleticism, or is he still just a guy? And in that case, then do you replace his athleticism with Shaq Riddick's and let him have another year to develop like you have Martin, so to speak? So those are the questions, I think, at the onside linebacker. And honestly, I have zero opinion because we haven't seen enough out of Riddick and Martin and obviously Okpalagu. I'm not even going to talk about Wegman because he's just injured.
Yeah, your comment to me was, as soon as he's healthy, get rid of him. So before he can pick up a spot on the injured reserve, you have to pay him.
Well, that and you don't want to like get teased by him and then waste a roster spot because you gave him a spot and then he gets injured again. So
right,
you know, and so that's why the only thing I know is that Alex Okafor is a nice player. He's not good. He's not great. He's not a 10 sack a year guy like people thought he was going to be. He's a nice player. Outside of that, I don't know anything else.
At cornerback, we know Patrick Peterson, but then, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty after Patrick Peterson. Does Mike Jenkins make the roster? Does Justin Bethel start? What do we get out of Brandon Williams? Do we have anything behind them? And so that whole side of the field, that's a fun watch. That's something to watch every day. You know, that's when we start tracking, okay, who gave up which catches, and when Justin Bethel gets back on the field, what highlight plays happen. So that other side of the field, that's incredibly intriguing. And you don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what Brandon Williams can do year one. We don't know who else is going to step up. We don't even know who all is going to be on the roster during training camp, for all we know.
No, that's the weirdest thing, right? Is like, we don't even know what this is going to consist of. Who is going to be on the roster? And so right now, you know, obviously you're going to have you're going to have Peterson and Bethel and then
the inside one, I'm not even worried about, because it's either going to be Tyrann Mathieu when he's healthy, or two, it's going to be Tyvon Branch. That's where I've seen them.
When he's healthy.
So I hope that that they're not both hurt at the same time. Because if that happens, well, then there's some other questions. Who do they put in the slot? Do they have to look at one of the other corners? Like Marquis Christian, they like his versatility. They haven't played him in the slot. They've been playing him back deep.
Yeah, he's listed at a strong free safety right now. I think that's going to be the question. So you know Peterson's on the team. You know Bethel's on the team. Brandon Williams is on the team. I mean, he's really going to have to just screw stuff up to not.
He's supposed to be a dynamic special teams player, so he's supposed to be, you know, and that, you know, in some ways, the special team side is going to be kind of fun, because one, you've already got a 3-time special teamer in Bethel. You've got Brandon Williams, highly touted as a special teams player. Marquis Christian, who's ready to knock some heads off as a special teams player, and already said that he wants to lead the team in special teams tackles, which would be quite the thing to do, since Justin Bethel had twice as many as the next guy on the list last year.
Exactly. The question really becomes, so if we say we know six, Peterson, Bethel, Williams, Branch, Mathieu, and Jefferson, the six, the question becomes, are they keeping – they keep usually nine, right?
Nine or ten, yeah.
So who are the next three to
four? Well, and then you also have to include, because the way it usually numbered on the roster, Buchanan's also included in that.
Sure. Okay, yeah. So from there you have DJ Swearinger. Because he's kind of listed as the starter right now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
strong he safety. Been. And then
it's been he and Jefferson – in base, with Branch coming in as the nickel.
Isn't Tyvon playing starting at corner though right now?
Opposite
Peterson?
They had Brandon Williams playing that spot in minicamp.
Okay, so I guess we'll see day one how they do that. But, you know, so you have...
But that's another thing. They could go with Branch on the outside if they felt they needed to as well.
And so... You know, but those are, we all know those players. So then you're talking about Clemens. What do they do with him? Is he going to make the roster? Is he going to even be on the roster? Like you said, day one. Sean Prater, again, a journeyman cornerback. Carriel Brooks, a guy that they obviously like because they've kept him around for so long. Asa Jackson and Mike Jenkins, again, two vets.
You got Marquis, safety, rookie. And Harlan Miller as well.
And Harlan Miller. And then you have Eli Buka, who they've raved about. And so, I mean, and then is a guy like Darrell Eskridge or Matthias Farley going to, you know, do enough to make this roster and bump out a DJ Swearinger or a Chris Clemens? I think going in, you're probably right. The defensive backs are the most interesting part to watch, but that's because there's like no known outside of Peterson. We don't know anything about when Matthew's going to be back. We don't know anything about when Bethel's going to be back. So literally, or sorry, Peterson and Jefferson, but literally everybody else, we have no idea. You know, it's kind of like the backup positions at outside linebacker. We have no idea.
Exactly. And that, you know, it's kind of, this is a much more interesting conversation than the offense, because you're like, you know, quarterback three, and these are guys who actually
offensive linemen.
Right. It's like, who's the last offensive lineman to make the team? Who's going to be tight end four? No, this is intriguing, especially when especially if you look at how the season ended. Say what you will about Carson Palmer's failure, and I'm going to say this again. The Cardinals, based on, and partially maybe it was for effect, but you look at the way they approached it, all or nothing. They saw that Carolina game as a failure on defense. More than anything else, it was a failure on defense more than it was a failure on offense. The defense was terrible, and then the offense couldn't bring them back and turn the ball over.
Well, and I'll tell you this, because our listeners won't hear it before this is posted, so I can tell you. I buy into that, but there is something to the Carson Palmer sucks in the playoffs thing.
Yes.
So Carson's stats as a starting quarterback in the playoffs, and if we take out that one pass in Pittsburgh before he blew out his knee, because he gets credited with the quarterback loss for that, so that's one, that's not fair. So then you have to take out the one completion for 66 yards to kind of, you know, even everything out. If you take out that, he's 1-2. He's a 56% passer. He's thrown 5 touchdowns to 7 interceptions. But the biggest thing and the biggest drop-off as Carson Palmer as a playoff quarterback is his points per game dropped in every game from what he averaged in the regular season. In 2009 with the Bengals, he averaged 25, just under 26 points per game. They scored 14. With the Cardinals, they scored just under 31, 30.6 points per game last year, 20 in Green Bay, 15 in Carolina. Carson Palmer averaged 28 points per game as a starting quarterback, and in the playoffs, he averages 16. His offenses average 16.4. So the question is, why? And so, you know, not to divert from what we were talking about, but right. I just thought that was interesting.
Well, and you can explain a couple of it. One, you're playing better teams, and so exactly. That will naturally go down some.
You expect a small drop in production. Yeah. I completely agree. With that, but not the, I mean, you look at the Cardinals, they went from averaging 30 points a game to now they're averaging 17. That's, I mean, we're talking two touchdowns. I mean, yes. We're talking two scores worse in the playoffs. And that's just that, as bad as the defense was, if you're averaging 16 points a game in the playoffs, then you're not a good quarterback. So then you're one that you have to be able to overcome as a starter. And so that's, you know, for me, and that's what the article is about. That's the progression of Carson Palmer. He has to show that he is a capable playoff quarterback now. And that, I think, will help define his legacy overall.
Well, and you look at the way the Cardinals have done there with the roster. What did they do? They brought everyone back on offense. So they're content. They believe in, their offense.
But they didn't, the one thing they did revamp was the offensive line.
They did. So they
And they you know that they blame that on the offensive. And that's fair. I mean, that is fair. They let go of Bobby Massey. They, you know, obviously let go of Ted Larson.
And Jonathan Cooper.
And let go of Lyle Cinnaline. I mean, we're talking 60% of the offensive line is new. So I mean, that's massive. It's not like it's one position. It's 60% of the offensive line.
And so, yeah, so they're comfortable with their skill positions. They trust them. They weren't happy with their line, and they weren't happy with the defense. And so they added pass rush, and they overhauled the secondary. Even though the secondary was supposedly their strength, they still overhauled it. So that's why I'm interested in seeing the defense, and especially the defensive backfield. Can they gel and make plays together, especially when you get to the preseason?
And that's going to be key. Is you're going to have to see either that pass rush improve so much that it elevates the play of the secondary, or Brandon Williams, Harlan Miller, and Justin Bethel especially are going to have to grow up really, really fast,
really fast,
and be, you know, a viable option. Because I can tell you this much, I can promise you this much. If Green Bay is healthy going into, you know, a playoff game against Arizona next year, nobody's picking Arizona. Nobody. If their secondary and their defense is playing the way they were last season, they're going to have to prove that they can stop Aaron Rodgers, you know, in the big time, because they did for the most part until the very end. And so that's, you know, that's what's going to happen next year, you know. And honestly, like, for me, I think that the pass rush is going to allow the secondary to get through their growing pains. Or maybe it's just wishful thinking. I don't know. But I honestly believe that the pass rush will allow the secondary to gel, allow them that time to get better. And let's be honest, the schedule doesn't hurt either. I mean, like I said, no Tom Brady. That's still a very talented New England team. You know, Tampa Bay is a very good team with a second-year quarterback, though. Buffalo is a good team. I won't say very good, but they're a good team. They have some nice weapons. Then you get St. Louis and a rookie quarterback. I mean, the schedule should help them gel as well, but, you know, it won't be as much of a problem if now that maybe their schedule is a little bit easier than it was, what, 2 weeks ago before Tom Brady's suspension was upheld.
All right, so let's wrap this show up. We're right at the we're a little bit over an hour. Talk training camp, talk PUP list, talk Darnell Dockett. I think we're going to give the show a 1 week break because there's not much to talk about after just a couple of practices, and
well,
we'll be
back. We're
not
going to talk about the conditioning drill test.
No, we're not. We're not doing that. And so we'll give it a week, come back after next week, kind of leading up. So we've had a full week of camp and we're kind of looking at what to look forward to for preseason game one. Hopefully we haven't lost a starter on defense because that tends to happen every single year.
Exactly. So let's hope for no injuries. No injuries.
Well, we're going to wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Ree. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. The show is on Blog Talk Radio, and it is also featured on CardsWire.com and RevengeOfTheBirds.com, as well as Sports360AZ.com. We're everywhere, guys. We're everywhere. Listen to the show. Again, Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root, and thanks for listening. That'll wrap up the show, guys.
Have a great night.